This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Frida Liu. It's Tech Talk and it's Thursday, which means it's time for our DNA series or Digital News Asia. And today is Edwin Yap, Senior Editor and Co-Founder of Digital News Asia without Karamjit Singh. And we have with us our Nazreen Hassan, the CEO of Cradle Fund. Trivia, he is the first guest that ever appeared on BFM over 3 years ago. And of course, we've had many chats since then. But we'll start off with Edwin, what today's topic is all about.
Hi, Frida. Standing in for Karamjit Singh is a real tall task, but I'll try. First topic we're going to talk about this afternoon, is the Asian Business Angel Forum to take place next Thursday and Friday. And together with us, we have Nazreen Hassan, CEO of Cradle Fund, who will just shed some light on this conference, because I think it's a very important conference for the angel and startup and funding scene in Malaysia.
Mm. All right. I thought we were going to talk about business analytics, but
Thankfully not.
that was a real scare.
I know we've had Jonathan Lee come on before to talk a little bit about this, but I guess it's good as well just to give a recap of what it's all about and why the need for such a forum.
All right. Thanks, Rita. The Asian Business Angels Forum is a regional forum that's held in various Asian countries every 2 years or so. And this year, we've obtained the rights to host the Asian Business Angels Forum. We've been lucky. I think the ABEF, as it's called, is very important because, as you've seen in the technology funding scenario in Malaysia, a lot of it, particularly in the early stages right now, is currently government dependent. You know, in order to actually generate bigger and stronger success stories, we need for private sector funds to actually come and fund the early stages and help the companies grow by their value add, via their networks, via their influence. Angel investing used to be around prior to 2004. I think back then, Tan Sri Tan Tiong Hian led the likes of the KL Angels Club. But after 2004, all the angel clubs went defunct.
Hmm.
Yeah. In 2009, Cradle was given the mandate to jumpstart the angel ecosystem. And one of the things that we did was we approached the Business Angels Network of Southeast Asia and asked them for advice on how to grow the angel ecosystem in Malaysia. As you've seen in the last 2 years, there has been two angel clubs that have started out. You know, there's Virtuous Investment Circle and there's KL Angels Club. And now we are hosting the ABEF.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, other than funding, you know, what value does a conference like this bring to the startup community?
Well, first and foremost, it brings value to the funding community. Those who have... those who are interested to make technology investments and would like to learn how to make technology investments, they can learn from some of their more mature regional peers. They can learn from some of the angel investors that came from Europe and US. Angel investing is something still very new to us. So if the funders, particularly those from the private sector side, are interested to learn and they can start their journey with ABEF, then going onwards, the funding from the private sector community will improve.
Mm. And I think one thing that was very interesting that Jonathan Lee, the VP of Commercialization Ventures from Cradle Fund, came and said, the conference itself, but I think the event before the conference, which is an educational session for investors and for the startup community. So when you want to pitch, what do you need to do? And of course, for the investors as well, when you look at technology, you got to look at it a little bit differently from what you would normally invest in.
Yes. On the 23rd, we will be having a session which addresses both the funding community and the startups, as you pointed out. I think over the years, there's been a lot of training provided to startups on how to raise funding. That is pretty straightforward. But more importantly, I think the coaching that's provided to the funders will be very, very important.
Mm.
I think guidance from their peers, angel investors from other countries, will be useful in getting them comfortable in investing in technology.
Hmm. And how has the startup community grown in the eyes of an investor, you know, like you guys? Are we seeing anything groundbreaking coming out locally?
Well, groundbreaking is pretty.
How
big
do you
word.
Mean by groundbreaking? You mean another Facebook or Twitter?
No.
Groundbreaking is pretty rare. You know, we have seen one or two technology companies that have groundbreaking technologies, but they're not usually in ICT.
Mm.
You know, but we have seen some successes on the local front where. You know, our local companies have been acquired by either foreign companies or other larger local companies. So in that sense, we have had some traction and success stories from the funding that's been done by both the government agencies and the private sector.
Yeah, I think I can testify to that too. I've been covering the scene for the past 6 months since the last conference we had, Silicon Valley Comes to Malaysia. I think there are some notable startups that have taken stage in the last 6 months or so, and I think one thing that is different from the days when I first covered this is that not only do you see the passion in these young people that are coming up, but their ideas are a lot more solid. They are not just fleeting moments, you know, that come out of a mama shop, that kind
Otherwise
of thing.
Otherwise, we're back to our dot-com days.
Yes, yes. And I think a lot of that has to do with the changing paradigm in the past, I would say 6 years or so, where the internet has really empowered these young people. Not only are they able to educate themselves, but they are able to participate in the internet. You know, if they can write lines of code, they can put it on and off they go, you know. Perhaps, you know, in the early days of the dot-com era, this wasn't the case. And I think this has certainly made our own startup community here more vibrant. I think, wouldn't you agree, Nazri?
Yeah, I think the transition that we have seen in the last few years is that more and more technology companies are looking at it more from a business perspective as well.
Mm. Yeah, certainly.
You know, in the old days, you would have geeks and everything like that, just purely focusing on the product development per se. But I think over the years, via some of the coaching and business programs that has been introduced by some of the agencies, we've actually inculcated in the entrepreneurs a sense that, look, this is a business. You can't say that just because you're an entrepreneur and you shoot from the hip, that business fundamentals don't apply to you.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's a technology business. Technology is the flavor, but business is the essence.
Yeah. You know what's the worry, though? You know, the worry is you hear companies like Facebook buying Instagram that hasn't made any money for $1 billion, and people are now thinking, okay, I'm going to come up with that app and I'm going to make $1 billion. It's also, and that gets publicized a lot. So sometimes I think maybe conferences like this should say, hey, you know, come back to earth. You know, so just a point. And who are the big names that are actually coming for this conference?
We've got quite a few, actually. We've got the founding president of the European Business Angels Network, Anthony Clark.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Bridget Bowman, you know, who is also a former president of IBAN. We've got Alan May, who is the head of the Life Science Angels in the US. We've got distinguished members from the Business Angels Network of Southeast Asia. So even though it's called ABEF, you know, but actually the turnout is actually quite global. The whole of the global angel talent capital is coming here in KL.
And how many people are you expecting for this event?
Currently, we have about 400 plus registrations. Our target is about 500. We still got about a few days left. Should be okay.
And that was Nazrin Hassan, the CEO of Cradle Fund, together with Edwin Yap from DNA. And we'll continue our conversation on his recent trip to San Francisco in just a moment. Tech Talk, BFM 89.9. It's Tech Talk. This is Frida Liu. I'm here with Edwin Yap, Senior Editor and Co-Founder of Digital News Asia, DNA. And Nazrin Hassan, the CEO of Cradle Fund, is here, and he can feel free to chip in as well. Bring your own device, or BYOD is a topic that we'll be discussing, and you might have heard the term before during one of our hundreds of previous interviews. And of course, Edwin, you recently came back from a Citrix conference. I think the people who actually sort of popularized this in San Francisco. Tell us all about this conference.
Don't worry, Nazrin, I promise not to ask you about analytics, okay?
Thank you.
Anyway,
thank God.
this is the conference held by Citrix yearly. They have two conferences around every year, one in Barcelona and one in San Francisco. And this one is basically a chance for Citrix to make their biggest announcement. They meet press, analysts, as well as their partners and customers.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was held last week on Wednesday and Thursday. I was there to cover it for DNA. And I think much of the thrust of the event was really to advance some of the tools that they have to make bring your own device a reality. Now, Citrix is basically a virtualization and a infrastructure software player. And one of the innovative things that they have is really to extend the desktop to you in a remote way. And they have interesting tools and software to do it. And one of the things that they can do is actually send the entire desktop from a server right to the bare minimum computer. And they can do it across all platforms,
right,
including the iPads, the Androids, the desktops. And even they demoed something that is what is popularized by Scott McNeely in his days in The Sun, called Thin Client, where you basically have a hardware standalone, and all the software is being sent to you via the internet. So this is quite an interesting and exciting development here.
And I guess BYOD, bring your own device, is a trend that's coming whether we like it or not. And what are the key drivers? I guess the mobile phone.
Yes, smartphone, tablets. But I think it's interesting to note a survey done by another competing player called VMware. They did a survey here of Malaysian respondents early this year. Of 209 Malaysian respondents, 82% said that they actually bring their personal mobile device to work. And 91% say that their companies are aware of this. So I want to jump in there and ask you, Nazrin, do you bring your own device to Cradle Fund?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, okay. What would that device comprise?
Currently, it's a BlackBerry and an iPad.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So the question then is, as a CEO of a major company like that, do you find that you have adequate support if you want your iPad to look at some of the internal data, some of the secure data that you have on your servers?
Not currently, perhaps.
He's just looking at football matches.
don't remind him. He's an Arsenal fan. Anyway, I think the point that is the challenge. A lot of people want to bring their devices on board, but they don't get the support that they need. Okay. Another interesting stat that came out of the VMware survey is that 71% of Malaysian employees interviewed said they are happier to work with the given the freedom to use their technology of choice, while 58% reported being less stressed at work when using their technology of choice. Very interesting. More than half of this survey respondents say that. And I do not know whether this actually translates to productivity, but apparently this is a trend that is,
I guess it's
here to stay.
It's ease of use. I'm comfortable. I don't have to learn anything new, you know. So
yes, I think a lot of this has been brought about by the internet economy or internet culture. We are so used to things like the Facebook interface, the Twitter interface, web apps, basically. All software coming to you from a single browser anytime, anywhere.
Okay.
I think so.
And the problem also lies with enterprise software not as up to date with consumer software, ease of functionality.
Well, there is a chasm, I would say. Enterprise software has traditionally never been built this way. Even if you look at the typical ERP software, and you know, just from any vendor for that matter, you will see that it's designed into be very monolithic, very state, very boring looking. You know, whereas you have Facebook-like features now appearing, and consumers are so used to it, so they tend to equate what is in their personal lives to the enterprise, and they become not so happy when there is a mismatch of the two. But I think all major vendors are moving in this direction, including Oracle, Citrix, VMware, even IBM. They are beginning to bring this level of interaction to the forefront, because they know that consumers, a large part of the consumers today, are the Gen Y, Gen X, and they are used to this kind of interface. And I think the point, one of the key points that came out of the conference is that if you are able to provide such a software, such an interface, you will collaborate better, you will share data better, you will get your apps on the go better. And one of the stories I wrote whilst there was the fact that enterprises must learn to embrace this new work-life paradigm.
Right. And of course, I'm sure this topic, security and privacy, was brought up, and it's always a concern. And with all this talk of remote wipe and so forth, is it assuring enough?
Well, I think we are in the beginning phases of the curve. I would argue that, in fact, having all your data centralized is an easier way to manage data and apps, so security can be built in from the ground up rather than being in remote places. For example, Nazreen, if you had downloaded something from your server that you want to read a report, for example, that's confidential, and you lose your iPad, that would be a problem, right? You know? But what companies like Citrix, VMware, and the rest are doing is they are building apps that does not download the data until you actually turn it on. That means when you tap on it, you actually sign in on a single sign-on. The technology takes the application as well as the data and securely puts it on your desktop. And when you are when you exit that program, the data and apps are not there. So in other words, this centralized control gives
is actually
better security. Because you can actually control the security and privacy.
So what are we doing at Cradle Fund? I'm sure you're not the only one bringing your own device.
No, I think that the rest of the office is very actively using their iPads as well. But I disagree on the point that it makes you less stressed, actually. I think we work all the time. The problem is that work has spread across because of the devices that we have. So we're not working 9 to 5 anymore. We're working all the time.
24/7.
Yes. Yeah. That is a contentious. So that was what the survey said, not what I said. Let me clarify that. But in fact, being a family man myself, I, and a freelancer for a long time, I find that the demarcation between work and life is blurred, especially for a guy like me being a journalist, being deadline driven. I find that after a particular time, I'll rush to finish my dinner, spend time with my kids, and when they go to bed, I'm back at the story I'm writing, the story that I stopped at 6 o'clock, for example,
And I don't think it's the tools, it's the mindset.
Yes.
I think it's knowing when to switch off.
Yes, I think so. And I think for enterprise,
but then I'm not the CEO.
But there's a problem there. I mean, if everybody else is 24/7 and you're not, and you're seen as not responding to the current business climate.
Yes.
And I think the devices forces you to behave the same way.
I'm not available at the moment.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that was also spoken about. I asked the CEO of Citrix, Mark Templeton, and he also mentioned that, yes, there is a always on culture, but it's ultimately it's up to the enterprise, the company, and yourself to actually manage the culture. We talked about if an email is sent to, say, Nazim sends to Jonathan, for example, does he expect it to be answered in under 2 minutes, for example?
You know, certain things, just working with the team, sometimes there's some things that I need them to check on or whatever, I'll send an email. If it's urgent, I'll call.
That's right.
If it's something that's happened over the weekend, I just expect an answer on Monday.
Yeah.
Just because something came up. Yeah. But if it's urgent, I'll make a call.
Yeah, that's right.
It's simple things.
So I think that's very true. And we got to be cognizant of the fact that these are just tools.
Yeah.
And like any other tools, it can be misused for good or for bad, or rather for bad. But it comes back to the culture of the company and how they actually do this thing called work shifting, And sometimes it is important that if you need to get out of the office at a certain time, say 3 o'clock, to attend to something, and if tools that enable you to do that because you can follow up with a task after 5 o'clock, for example, that 2 hours you're out, you're also not being disturbed in your personal capacity.
Right.
So I think the key point here is that we are moving away from a time-based type kind of a work lifestyle to a task-based kind of work lifestyle.
Absolutely.
And unless you're like Frida, you got to be in between 11 and 2. Then
10
that's
to 2.
10 to 2. That's just too bad, Frida.
That's a KPI. that's it, So anything interesting else? Anything else interesting coming up in the tech industry?
There's only one event that caught my eye this coming Saturday, I believe. It's called a hackathon. This hackathon is quite interesting. It's called the Lead Bus, LEET. I don't know why it's called the Lead Bus. In on the website it says 1337 bus, but you can find out more from this link here. It's a bit long, but I'll just read it out to you. www.tixku.com/event/1337bus. That is tixku.com/event/1337bus. Now, what I found interesting is that they're going to get a bunch of participants and they're going to start tracking from all the way from the LRT station, and they're going to get onto a bus and they're going to move brainstorm as you go along. And, and what happens that when you reach the office at 11 o'clock, there's a brainstorming session and the destination, and then they'll do their ideas, and then at 3 o'clock they'll start their actual project, and they'll present it at 9 p.m. and by 10 they'll move back to the bus, the LRT station, and they'll announce the results of who the winners are. So this is, I think, organized by Bikesh from iTrain. So you can check that out too.
Gotta try that someday. You know, brainstorming on a bus.
Yeah, brainstorming.
That's got to be tried. A bus or a train.
Yeah, train. I mean, it's basically a transitional play. You know, instead of locking people up in a room like this, a studio like this, you do it on the go.
I think that's quite cute. Yeah. All right. Edwin Yap, Senior Editor and Co-Founder of Digital News Asia, or DNA, together with Nazrin Hassan, the CEO of Cradle Fund. This is Tech Talk, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.